Just a quick heads up that this podcast will be containing detailed plot spoilers and heavy-duty language. Listener discretion is advised.
Say, kids, what would you like to do tonight?
Listen to the H.P. Lovecraft Literary Podcast!
Huh?
Every week, these two really smart and funny guys give a synopsis of a Lovecraft story, then talk about background critical reviews and what the stories say about the author.
How do we get these two boys into our home?
HPPodcraft.com.
The internet? I don't know.
It's wholesome family entertainment.
We should listen to you on iTunes. It's easy.
And then we can impress our school friends with all our arcane knowledge.
Say, you know what I like to do on a night like this? With the dark woods out back silhouetted by the ghostly full moon, the branches shadows making all sorts of crazy angled patterns in the yard?
You two aren't going to do that again, are you?
Why don't you two go out back and play with the shadows?
Take the baby with you.
Hey, there's already somebody out there.
What?
I think they're coming to talk to us.
They should have listened.
Yeah. Hey, we still can.
Continuing on with Hunnic March Madness 2015, no, today is St. Paddy's Day, but I decided to incorporate a little bit of the green as well as H.P. Lovecraft this week. Hunnic Outcast here, never question it ever. Here's what I'm designed to do, as I said, with Season 2. For everyone who has just started to come across the podcast, I know what I'm going to be doing for Season 3. Dedicated to the 80s. But as I go through my stats, what you, the listener, seems to enjoy the most are either the Kaiju or the Batman pod, and I thank you for it, believe me. And we're coming close to our 1,000th download, and I have a very special podcast that has something to do with the 1,000th download, and, well, I'll save it when I'm ready to record it, and I'll go into all the details why I picked that movie to review for said download. But in the meantime, one of ideas I had for today for St. Paddy's Day, Leprechaun, Boondock Saints, but I picked Reanimator. I mean, it still has green in it, the Green Reagent. The reason why I didn't pick Leprechaun, now playing podcast, they did the Leprechaun series, and it's really hard to top that, what they, you know, what they put together for that podcast series. I picked up the Leprechaun set. I really have very little to say about that series. Watched it once. I don't have, except for Leprechaun 3, but I could save Leprechaun 3 for Season 4 for Hunnic Outcast. And Boondock Saints, Norman Reedus is in it. Heard rumors that at the end of Season 5 of Walking Dead, he's going to be killed off. Those are rumors. So I figured I'd save Boondock Saints for then. If he does not die at the end of Season 5, I have a different podcast in store. So that's why I didn't want to cover Boondock Saints. I mean, there were so many, but I figured I want to see what I could do with Lovecraft right now, because maybe for Season 9, 10, 12, whatever, Season 3 will be dedicated to the 80s, 4 will be dedicated to the 90s, 5 to the 70s. I'm picking decades and with some bonus in between, but maybe one season I'll just do to anime, one season to Lovecraft. Haven't decided. Season 2 is going to give me a better idea what you, the listener, want to hear. And so, that's why this is, you know, Lovecraft week. This is the first time I've seen Reanimator, by the way. I had heard of it. I used to see it in the video store, was not that impressed. Looked at the back of the VHS box, and to me it was just like another, you know, what I thought would be another killer puppet movie, which it was a Romney, and it wasn't. And at the time, they weren't doing anything for me. 2004, Bravo, if that channel still exists, had a top 100 horror movie countdown, and Reanimator was in the 70s or 80s. A couple years later, in 2009, Cinemassacre's Monster Madness, the angry video game nerd discussed Reanimator. as well as the two sequels. But I finally broke down and saw the movie today. Did not pick up the Blu-ray. I know it has an audio commentary track. I think the third movie has one as well, Jeffrey Combs. Didn't have a chance to get them. I just saw Reanimator today on Netflix streaming, so that's how I'm doing my research, and as well as our good friend Wikipedia. So you have to bear with me on that, because this was a very, very, very last-minute idea. So without further ado, let's get into Reanimator. Came out on October 18th, 1985. No surprise right there. The budget was $900,000, but the box office made $2 million, so it was a success. It was distributed by Empire Pictures. I am familiar with them. I've seen a few of their movies. I'm sure you have as well. Troll being one of them. Terrorvision, another one. Dolls. Pretty much, this was a company that was formed in the early 80s by a Mr. Charles Band, because he was just dissatisfied with how a lot of the distribution companies distributing films. So he put together said company. Of course, there were some successes. Reanimator, Ghoulies, another killer puppet movie, which I will be discussing in the not-too-distant future. From Beyond, another H.P. Lovecraft movie I've not seen as of yet, but I will be discussing it in, you know, shortly. And eventually, Mr. Band formed another company that I am familiar with as well, Full Moon Entertainment, which is, I will be discussing a lot of those movies in, you know, for season 4. But their headquarters were in Rome, Italy, and as well as L.A., which explains why one of the movies I can't wait to talk about was actually filmed in Rome. But this movie, of course, stars Jeffrey Combs, who I am familiar with. He did voice Scarecrow in season 4 of Batman the Animated Series. And for those of you who read my written reviews of Gotham on the Geekcast Radio Network, TFG1 Mike and I had this discussion on the forums where we were kind of hoping that Jeffrey Combs would be, you know, the doll man or doll maker, you know, for Gotham. Instead, Jeffrey Combs had a small part in the Red Hood episode, which kind of sucked. Reanimator, of course, is based loosely on a Lovecraft story called Herbert West Reanimator. I have not read it. I've not read a lot of Lovecraft works, so again, gonna save it for another season, for another time, in a roundabout way, but from what I understand, that story takes place in the 20s. And here it takes, you know, the movie takes place in the 80s, and this one's more of a dramedy. It opens up in a medical university in Switzerland. Herbert West, played by Jeffrey Combs, we find out that he's brought his dead professor back to life. Herbert West apparently has created this chemical. It's this neon green ectochlor type of substance called Regant, and that's hard to pronounce. And he tries to bring his professor back to life. However, as another medical school colleague and security comes in, they see that the dead doctor, Dr. Gruber, is in a zombie-like state, and West explains that Dr. Gruber had died, and West tried to bring him back to life, but the chemical that he used too large of an amount, and the doctor, unfortunately, his eyes explode, and, you know, we get into this great soundtrack, and then we fast forward to the, I want to pronounce this correctly, Miskatonic University in New England. I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly. So Herbert leaves Switzerland, comes back to the States to study in New England. He is renting a room from a fellow medical student, Dan, who is dating the dean of the university, that is Dean Alan Hasley, played by Robert Sampson. I'm not too familiar with him, but apparently Dan is dating the dean's daughter, Megan, who is played by Barbara Crampton, who was a Scream Queen, and she has aged very well. And she's most noted for being naked in this, in the last few minutes of the movie, and almost getting eaten out by a reanimated corpse. But we'll get there when we get there. To rent Dan's room in this house, and they kind of have a deal because Herbert knows that Dan is dating the dean's daughter, and Dan knows that Herbert's been, you know, killing animals and bringing them back to life with the chemical, but they kind of have an understanding. Dan will keep his mouth shut as long as Herbert doesn't tell the dean that Dan and Megan are dating. But unfortunately, things don't go as planned, as Herbert has decided to kill Megan's cat. He brings it back to life, and Herbert convinces Dan that they should go to the university and go into the medical lab and try to bring human corpses to life. And as Dan and Herbert go into the medical lab, pretty much what happens is that the dean finds out about this, and the dean bars both Dan and Herbert from the university and rescinds Dan's student loan. But I think it's also because the dean finds out that Dan and Megan were dating, and the father is taking this a little bit more personally than he should. However, the dean has a colleague, Dr. Carl Hill, played by David Gale. And David Gale is supposed to be this renowned brain surgeon who's trying to teach students, you know, the function of the brain. And of course, Herbert is laughing it all off and claiming that there's more to the brain than free will than the good doctor will let the students know. Anyway, it all ends up at the medical lab at the university as Herbert and Dan break back in. They try to take some corpses to bring back to life. Dr. Hill and Alan Hale, Zilly, of course, try to stop Herbert and Dan. However, the dean, Alan, is killed by a corpse. Herbert and Dan do use the chemical to bring the dean back to life. However, the dean is in this zombie-like state. Megan, of course, doesn't know what to think, and she hates Dan and Herbert for what they've done, and Dr. Hill tries to take advantage of the entire situation, claiming that, you know, he's always had a thing for Megan, and he's never liked Herbert, and he's never liked Dan. So, pretty much what happens is that while Herbert is, you know, back at the, back at Dan's house, Dr. Hill comes in and threatens to... Dr. Hill takes all the credit for Herbert's work. So Herbert kills Dr. Hill with a shovel and then decapitates Dr. Hill. However, somehow Herbert West has passed out, and Dr. Hill has used the Regent to bring himself back to life, but since his head has been disembodied, the body has a life of its own, as well as the head. Somehow the head uses the model of a dummy, you know, uses the head and sneaks back into the medical lab, and the head of Dr. Hill is now in a pan with blood. He uses the body to kidnap Megan, strips her naked, and is about to eat her out. Herbert West comes out of nowhere and threatens to take back his work and scoffs at the reanimated Dr. Hill. However, Dr. Hill apparently has not only used the Regent to bring other corpses back to life and create an army, but apparently he's using laser technology to control the will of the undead. Dan comes out of nowhere, there's a big fight, and apparently the reanimated corpse of the dean, which of course is Dean Allen, recognizes Megan and tries to tear some of the corpses apart before he's torn apart, and Dan and Megan try their best to escape. However, a reanimated corpse chokes Megan to death, and Dan gets his hands on some of the Regent and brings Megan back to life, and as everything fades to black, we could hear Megan screaming, and then the credits roll. So let's get into the beginning of this, dare I say, ghoulty pleasure. So the movie opens with, Herbert at the Institute in Switzerland, and of course, the whole scene with bringing Dr. Gruber back to life is kind of horrific and funny at the same time, and they're able, director Stu Gordon and, who also is one of the writers, is able to manage both the tension and the comedy with trying, and of course, let's not forget the 80s special effects of how Dr. Gruber is not only brought back to life, how his eyes explode, and, Jeffrey Combs as Herbert West is just countering that, he's given Dr. Gruber life, and he's not regretting what he did. Of course, they don't explain how he's able to leave Switzerland and go back to New England, and gets a further studies as a medical student. It's never really explained in between, but whatever the case may be, actors Dan and the actor who plays Megan, Barbara Crampton, Bruce Abbott is there with him. Apparently he was in the sequel, Bride of Reanimator. Again, I have not seen it. Apparently he's not been... He's done a lot of TV work, but Wikipedia doesn't help too much. Apparently he had been married to Linda Hamilton for a few years. All I can say is that he's like another muscle-bound beefcake in these type of movies. It's amazing he's a medical student and he has a great upper body and, muscular arms, which it's amazing how he's able to work out and be a doctor at the same time, but I guess lifting all those bodies. One of the things I do like about Dan is that while he's trying to work on a patient and the patient passes, the doctor that's mentoring Dan, tries to explain to Dan that, once a person is dead, they're dead. There's only so much, you can do. You can't take, you can't save everybody. You can't take things too personally. But I never get a feeling on Dan. Character's pretty much milquetoast to me. Then we have Barbara Crampton, as I said, who, plays Megan in this movie. She's in her 50s. She's aged very well. Apparently, she has a degree of theater arts at Castleton State University in Vermont, and she's also been in King Lear, so not bad, good for her. She has been in Puppet Master, and I'm not too sure of the Full Moon version of Puppet Master or the 1994 version with Donald Sutherland. She's been in a few soap operas, Days of Our Lives and Bold and Beautiful, which I'm not, I'm not surprised, but apparently she was also in the horror slasher film You're Next. Did not see that movie, but I've heard about it, so I definitely want to see You're Next. And she's been in a lot of work, and as I've said, it seems to be a lot of, horror slasher movies, which is fine, but, she's fun to watch, and apparently she was also in Playboy, which is not surprising, back in 1988, but she's fun. I mean, she is a thrill to watch here. Anyway, when they meet Herbert for the first time, when Herbert, decides to rent the room, Herbert pretty much has no personality. He doesn't have any social skills whatsoever. He pretty much just walks in, says, "I'm renting the room," and that's it. We also get Herbert and the animosity between David Gale as Dr. Carl Hill, as Herbert is trying to learn the functions of the brain, and Herbert claims that there's more to free will than Dr. Carl Hill is letting on. I love how Dr. Carl Hill is trying to teach a class, and Herbert keeps taking these pencils and breaking it as it's showing, like, you're breaking the student's will. You're not telling them the full potential of the brain. So, David Gale, he's a great adversary in these types of movies. He has been in The Giver, a movie that I had seen in high school. And he was in a movie called, well, The Brain. And if it is what I think it is, yes, it is an 1988 science fiction movie about a monstrous brain. Have seen it as well, and hopefully trying to find it on DVD. Yes, it is in DVD. It's out of print, but I do want to review that movie. I had seen it as a kid as well. Sadly, David Gale passed away in 1991 due to, I think, heart complications. He's awesome in this movie as the adversary, as the close-minded, slimy doctor who wants to steal credit. Then, of course, we have the dean of the university, Robert Sampson. As I said, I could not get much information on him. Nothing to him, anyway. He's just a prop, I feel. But one of the money shots in this movie is using Regent to bring Megan's cat back to life. Apparently, Herbert claims that the cat suffocated in a jar, and Herbert was keeping a refrigerator in his room, and he didn't want to tell Dan and Megan. And I love Herbert's response, claiming that, what was I supposed to do? Leave a note claiming that the cat was dead, and, you know, that was that. You know, he was going to apparently tell Dan and Megan about the cat dying, but Herbert, of course, wants to use the cat for his experiments, and, well, Herbert does use the Regent to bring the cat back to life, but apparently, since the cat's been dead for a while, it's been frozen in the refrigerator, I guess it gets a like a recharge or a reboost, and unfortunately, since most of the brain cells are dead, it becomes feral, and it has superhuman strength, or, you know, super animal strength, and it's just Jeffrey Combs as Herbert West trying to fight off this reanimated cat puppet type of prop, and it's hysterical. But eventually Herbert does, you know, kill the cat again, and he brings it back to life, and though the spine is broken, we see the puppet even more fucked up than it already is. It's a great scene, but then, you know, Dan and Herbert have an understanding where they're trying to continue, you know, to work on bringing reanimated corpses back to life. When Dan, of course, gets caught, and the dean of the university claims that West and Dan have gone cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs, here's the one thing that I do like. Usually in these type of movies where you have the monster in the basement or you're hiding the alien, whatever, you're trying to explain to authority figures that, you know, there is a monster here or there's an alien there, the authority figure doesn't want to listen to the average Joe. Here, this movie tries to take a better twist on the old trope. I feel that the Dean of Students does know that Dan and Herbert are working on bringing reanimated corpses back to life, but the problem is that the Dean is just upset that, you know, Dan and his daughter have been you know, together behind the dean's back, and he's just taking things way too personally, and that's why he punishes both Dan and Herbert. Not that they've been, you know, apparently stealing corpses, that, you know, Dan's been having sex with the dean's daughter. And that's pretty much it. But then, of course, as I said, Dr. Hill was a much better foil, and a much better villain, takes full advantage of the situation. So when the dean dies and he's attacked by corpses and he's kind of brought back to life, but he's kept in the, you know, medical lab in a straitjacket in this zombified state, Dr. Hill, we can see, is hitting on Megan, and he's saying, like, you know, I'm going to keep my, you can spend with me, and you can see he's starting to hit on Megan. So you can see the creepiness of Dr. Hill definitely emerging, which is, you know, which is why he's probably one of the best 80s villains I've seen so far. But we're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be back to discuss Acts 2 and 3 right after this.
Pixels in the Animation is the Geekcast Radio Network's video game cartoon review show. We are covering every episode of 9 different video game cartoons. Join TV's Mr. Neil and myself, TFG and Mike, as we trek through multiple Mario tunes, Zelda, Captain N, Mega Man, Sonic, and we are also driving through Donkey Kong Country. Pixels in the Animation is 100 episodes of video game cartoon goodness, so tune in to help us find the Pixels in the Animation, which you can find every Wednesday on iTunes and www.geekcastradio.com. Remote Control is the new TV podcast from the Geekcast Radio Network. We'll be covering TV shows and topics from the year 2000 to whenever now is. We'll have special themed episodes entitled Pilot and Season Premieres, as well as finishing finales. We'll also have Season Pass episodes, where we take a look at an entire season of a TV show. Remote Control can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and www.geekcastradio.com. So tune in, because we are all remote controlled.
Trash Video is your one-stop video shop in Sleazoid City.
Who the fuck is that dickhead?
I don't know.
We have the best rental stock of horror, cult, B-grade movies available on VHS.
Movies with corpse rape? Oh, let me get set.
Blu-ray? Fuck that shit! VHS!
Faces of Death is a family film.
Our professional, friendly, and knowledgeable staff are here to help you.
Hey, Roxy, after the shift, you wanna go watch a porno with me?
Shut up, Seth, I'm doing my nails.
So stop on by the store today.
I smell like old videotapes in here.
TrashVideoPodcast.com.
So now we move into the second and third acts of this movie, where Dr. Hill, of course, is trying to take advantage and take credit for Herbert West's work. Herbert, as I said, is back at Dan's house in the basement, and Dr. Hill, of course, is trying to intimidate Herbert into, you know, giving up all his research to Dr. Hill, so this way Dr. Hill will not only take credit, but he won't have Herbert committed. He's also threatening to have Dan disappear. So what Herbert does is that he looks like he's being intimidated, but he takes some of the reagent and, you know, sample the cat Rufus that had passed away, puts it under a slide of a microscope, and as Dr. Hill, of course, is mugging for the camera looking at this, feels very, if you ever seen the 86 film version of Little Shop of Horrors with Audrey 2 and Mushnick, you know, it's like, you don't look behind you until it's too late. Herbert, of course, grabs a shovel, beats Hill with it, and decapitates Hill. The rest is history. But it gets bizarre because as Herbert, I guess, is working on his research or whatever the case may be, he wakes up and the corpse of Hill is gone. And apparently Hill was able to not only use the reagent, but then it gets very Return of the Living Dead in a way where the, the Tar Man, how his head was, you know, cut off, but the body is still animated. There are moments, of course, where, you know, we've seen this in slapsticky comedies and cartoons. It works in a way, you know, for 80s special effects. Hill's head is detached from his body, and of course there are moments where apparently the body has a life of its own. I feel that the second Pirates of the Caribbean movie kind of closed the door where a corpse's head is being removed from the body, and the body's no other way to say, like with a chicken with its head cut off, and the head is trying to tell the body where the head is. But here, again, they try to add a new twist to an old, you know, gag. The body apparently now has the head of a mannequin, and the head is now in a duffel bag, in a way. But it's never really explained how the head is able to control the body, but it is what it is for these type of movies. Especially since, you know, in order for a person to speak, they need the vocal cords attached to the neck and the lungs to provide air. But, you know, again, it is a horror movie. Pretty much, Dr. Hill is, or was, a renowned brain surgeon, and apparently he's found a way to use laser technology to lobotomize the brain and create mind control. Why the hell not? He does use some of the Regent formula to control the reanimated corpse, of course, of the Dean, and he uses the Dean to kidnap Megan, and of course, in one of the most talked about scenes in the movie is that Megan is stripped naked in the medical lab of the University of New England, and she's naked, tied down, and the head of Dr. Hill is going to give, well, Megan head, or at least it's about to. It's a very grotesque scene, in a way where, or at least it tries to be. I don't think Megan or, you know, David Gale are trying to ham up the scene. I mean, they are hamming it, they are chewing the scenery, but you can tell they're having a great time with it. And apparently, Barbara Crampton doesn't seem to shave too much, if you know what I mean. But anyway, Barbara's got a great body, you know. I guess she was okay with what, you know, the reanimated corpse is doing. I mean, we see a lot. We see full nudity. The reanimated corpse is filling up her breast. I mean, she's unconscious, and then when she... I mean, we're about to see, like, this reanimated corpse head eat her out, but it is what it is. Herbert comes out of nowhere, and I love how Herbert's not even scared or intimidated by this reanimated corpse. He just kind of tells the corpse of Dr. Hill off and tells him to, you know, get a job at a sideshow. But apparently, Dr. Hill has had the upper hand, where he uses the Regent to not only reanimate more corpses, but apparently use his laser technology for free will. Dan, of course, comes out of nowhere as well, and there's a fight with corpses and Dan, Megan, and Herbert, but Herbert has a plan C, where he decides that if he injects the corpses with more Regent, it'll be an overdose and they'll die. I mean, after all, these are not zombies. It's not like, you know, if they bite you, you'll turn into a zombie. It's just, you know, they're reanimated dead flesh. So it's not like these reanimated corpses cannot die. But most of the time, the actors that are the reanimated corpses, they don't really do much. Some just stand around, which is understandable. You know, I understand. I guess, you know, if a reanimated corpse is not much, you know, an actor as a reanimated corpse can do, even though there have been better zombie movies. But again, going around and around and around, this is really not so much of a zombie film. Another interesting actor that I couldn't find credits for is a security guard, where he's just like sitting outside the medical lab, just, you know, reading a porno magazine and smoking a cigar. Hey, kids, remember when you used to be able to smoke in buildings? Yeah, Pepperidge Farm members. It's amazing, the security guard. I don't know the point of him. I guess you could hear, like, the corpses and the humans fight inside the lab. He kind of pokes his head every now and then, but nothing ever happens to this character. So it's kind of wasted. But eventually, Megan is able to talk to the reanimated corpse of her father, and the father is able to remember who Megan is, and he tries to fight off some corpses, and the corpses tear, you know, the Dean apart. And as I said, Megan and Dan try to get away, but a corpse chokes Megan to death, and there's kind of a Chekhov's gun in this scene, where Dan brings Megan to the upper level where he's trying to bring her back to life. And the doctor who had told Dan in the beginning of the movie where you can't take things too personally, and once a person is dead, they're dead, you can't bring her back to life. I guess because it's Megan and it's the daughter of the Dean, or they know that, you know, Dan and Megan are in love. The mentor doctor that was working with Dan is a little bit more sympathetic when Dan can't revive Megan. She doesn't, you know, she's not as cold to Dan when Dan is trying to revive Megan, unlike in the beginning, you know, when Dan tried to revive God knows who. So it's nice, you know, touching little scene. And it is a horror movie, and like most of these horror romance movies, I mean, I guess the best romantic movie ends in tragedy, the best romance story ends in tragedy, Megan dies. Dan apparently has a needle full of Regent, and I love how it starts to iris out like a Looney Tunes cartoon. He's going to bring Megan back to life, and you know, as everything, you know, irises out to black, we hear Megan screaming. So I don't know if we ever see a zombie Megan. I don't know if Barbara Crampton does return for Bride of Reanimator. It would be interesting to see. I'm kind of curious what would happen, and I will get my hands on the sequels. But 0 being the lowest, 5 being the highest, what would I give Reanimator? Personally, I would give it a 5 if it were up to me, but professionally, 3.5. There are pros and cons. 5 stars alone for Jeffrey Combs' performance as a deadpan, narcissistic, socially awkward medical student. And he has some great line reads, especially that get a job at a freak show line. He's awesome. David Gale is also, you know, great as the, you know, evil Dr. Hill. Barbara Crampton is fun to watch too, and she's nice to look at, but she's also fun to watch. The problem with this movie, as I said, it's an 80s movie, it's a low-budget horror movie, it's dedicated to the works of Lovecraft, but it's not, I mean, this is also during a time where Day of the Dead and Return of the Living Dead were out. But, it, as I said over and over and over again, this is not your typical zombie movie, even if it would be considered a zombie movie. I do like the fact that it does take place, you know, at a medical university, and the social commentary trying to bring dead tissue back to life. They're not going to go too technical in this type of movie. They kind of go a tad with the technicalities of how long the brain will last before it fully goes kaput, figuratively speaking. How much oxygen needs to go to the brain before the brain cells are dead. I mean, and how people come back in a vegetated state and has to be a fresh corpse in order for the corpse to talk and everything. And is it going insane, or are there side effects to the chemical that's giving these, you know, reanimated corpses superhuman strength? I like all of that. And I do love the score. But again, this movie's not for everyone. The good news is on Blu-ray, it's $8. So I will definitely break down and pick up the Blu-ray. Now, I do know that the third movie is out of print, but I would like to listen to the audio commentary track. Anything to listen to Jeffrey Combs, too. I do know that in 1999, apparently there's an audiobook version where Jeffrey Combs narrates. So anything that he does, I will definitely follow this man to the ends of the earth. And speaking of which, I do suggest, since I'm partnered with Geekcast Radio Network, that you give them a listen as well. Please check out all the wonderful shows that are on Geekcast Radio Network. Pullbag, Remote Control, Talking in Circles, Beyond the Night, Legends of the Dark Knight, From the Command Center. Go to geekcastradio.com, check out all the main shows, and please check out all the syndicated shows, my podcast, Hunnic Outcast, Dan and Jake at Classy from, you know, one of my guests, Dan Lamont and Jacob Williams. And of course there's Turtle Flakes, Smeared Ink, Future Imperfect, Doctor Whoiverse. Please check out all these wonderful shows, one and all. And all the other non-Geekcast Radio shows I subscribe to, Arkham Sessions, Trash Video Podcast, Disney Film Project, Now Playing, Books and Nachos, Torgo's Pizzeria Podcast, Real Ghost Stories Online, Anything Ghost. Please check out all these wonderful podcasts. And also continuously playing podcasts and the Bat Cave podcast and the H.P. Lovecraft podcast. Please check them all out, one and all. And speaking of now playing, I think they are coming down to the wire for their Kickstarter campaign, so congratulations, guys. But I do know that this spring/summer, I think they're going to have their usual donation drive, so please, you know, check out all these wonderful podcasts. And, of course, feel free to drop me a line at hunnickfeedback@gmail.com. You can find me over at Facebook, Hunnick Outcast, or the Facebook group page, Hunnick Outcast. And, of course, iTunes, Stitcher, and Spreaker, Hunnick Outcast, or Twitter, Hunnick Outcast. Please join me next time as I will be discussing the Call of Cthulhu. And until then, I will catch you next time.
You'll never get credit for my discovery. Who's going to believe a talking head? Get a job and a sideshow.